I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Here's something you're really going to love.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Todd Bowles, head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
From the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Did you watch any of the Tom Brady roast?
I caught snippets of it. I'm a huge Nikki Glaser fan.
Tom also lost $30 million in crypto. How did you fall for that? Even Gronk was like, me know that not real money.
Earlier on the show, Turner Sports play-by-play announcer Brian Anderson. UCLA head coach Sean Foster. Coming up, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Deshaun Foster is exiting stage left right now. Had a fun chat the last couple of segments with the head coach of UCLA football. So cool, man. Guy who scored a 33-yard touchdown in the first Super Bowl ever covered for NFL Network is leaving the Rich Eisen Show as the new head coach of UCLA football.
Kind of full circle, right?
Yeah. And telling Steve Smith stories from back in the day and, you know, talked about his Super Bowl touchdown run. And he's like, what else happened in that game? And I'm thinking to myself, well, I mean, Vinatieri kicked a field goal at the very end again for the second time in as many Super Bowls because Tom Brady marched him right down the field. Can't be referring to that. What's he referring to? Oh, the wardrobe malfunction is what he was referring to.
Oh, that one thing.
Yeah. Great chat, man. A lot of fun. Brian Anderson was on in hour number one. He's calling Knicks Pacers game two tonight on TNT.
Ooh,
Reggie Miller's going to be right next to him. Madison Square Garden for Pacers Knicks playoff game.
Curious about the whistles in that game tonight because that was a lot of controversy.
The last 2-minute report confirmed the call. Said that was a proper offensive foul call on the Indiana Pacers. Oh,
shocking it said that.
They've contradicted themselves. And by the way, tough guy. Who called your game last night? Who was one of your refs last night? Scott Foster.
Was it?
Yeah. He was one of the three refs in your 25-point game one win.
Well, that game was such a blowout, he couldn't really be a factor anyway, you know.
Foster's actually been really good for us.
Okay, this guy.
Foster's been good news when I see Scott Foster for our game.
If you missed any of the... Oh, by the way, unfortunately, ESPN's reporting right now Mitchell Robinson's out 6 to 8 weeks.
So
it's Precious Achiuwa time.
For 4 minutes.
No, he'll be playing more than 4 minutes. Oh, man, what a bummer. That guy cannot stay healthy. So the Knicks suffer another major injury from one of their stars. Oh,
if
my goodness.
If the Knicks were fully healthy, man, buddy, you'd have to be given serious consideration.
Or not. I mean, you know,
who knows?
This team is gelled in the way they have.
Randall could take away.
We'll discuss that later on. But joining us right now, our buddy from Sports Illustrated. Hey. We haven't spoken to Albert Breer in a while. There he is, Albert. Looking. Are you working on your tan already? It's only May. What's going on?
Man.
What the hell? What's happening?
I've told you, you know, this is like one of my biggest strengths is my ability to tan, which is kind of sad, but we already got it going outside of a lot of the kids' sports the last few weeks. I guess we'll do it.
Look at that.
You know what, too? Deshaun Foster is one of those guys that makes me feel old because he's my high school graduating class.
Yeah.
And I can still remember all those guys that were like the top players in the country. My senior year of playing football, you know, in high school and I remember Ronald Curry was the number one player in the number one player in the country that year, and Deshaun Foster was way the hell up there though.
Albert, we were going down memory lane of his high school championship game where he lost to Carson Palmer in his high school, and he had 6 touchdowns in the game that they lost, and he amassed 3,300 rushing yards on the season, and he said USC asked him to play corner. which
is that right?
Yes.
Wow.
Which is part of the reason why he went to UCLA. So,
you know what was crazy? Like, so if we're going to go down memory lane about like that year's class, which again was my senior class in high school, two of the best, and this is sort of dates me a little bit, but two of the best quarterbacks in the country were also like elite players in other sports. And you don't see that as much anymore, but you had Ronald Curry, who I believe was the number one recruit in both football and basketball.
Correct. Right? He was, like, yeah.
That's true.
I think he was in both. And if you remember, there was a quarterback from the next town over that got a lot less attention that wound up being the number one pick in the draft, and that was Michael Vick 3 years later. Mm. And then the other one is somebody you're very familiar with, and that was Drew Henson, who was excellent in football. I can remember going to Michigan football camp my senior year in high school and how he was treated like royalty there.
Oh, yeah.
And
baseball.
He was obviously a great, great baseball player.
Yeah, and obviously he was Mr. Michigan in football to the point where he wound up splitting starting gigs with Tom Brady.
Yeah,
part of the Brady building, you know, of his
legacy. You know what drives me crazy about that story though, Rich, is that everybody gets it wrong. Like, it was the story at the time was not like Brady is getting benched for Henson. The story at the time, as I remember it, was Tom Brady is holding off Drew Henson because he was one of the most high-profile recruits in the history of that program, one of the most high-profile recruits in the country that year. And, like, he was from down the street. So the fact that Brady held him off was the story at the time, right? You remember that.
I do.
It wasn't that, like, Brady sucks and he's getting benched. It was like, oh, my God, Tom Brady is holding off this, like, force of nature, Drew Henson, which sounds crazy now, but that's what it was at the time.
No doubt. I mean, Lloyd Carr essentially had to play Drew Henson. I mean, he got him there, and the whole state was like, well, let's see this kid. Like, he's this huge recruit, and the kid from San Mateo didn't really have much, you know, cred in the state of Michigan. And so they had to see him, and Brady was holding him off. And he was better than Drew Henson to the point where Lloyd's like, screw it. He's got to be the guy. And I remember being in I was in Syracuse and they swapped quarters, starting quarters, Michigan Syracuse. And I believe you were in that building, Chris,
sitting in the end zone for that game.
I mean, I was there with my brother-in-law and watching Brady just play his head off. And it's just like, okay, I guess we got to see Drew Henson anyway, because he's Drew Henson, and Brady just took it over, man. And I guess it was held against him in being 199th overall. I guess, you know,
it's crazy too. Cause like people forget how good Henson was, like, cause I'll never forget. Like, so my junior year being in the closed end of the horseshoe, like our fraternity block was in like the left corner of the end zone. And seeing a throw that Drew Henson made to David Terrell, Michigan beat Ohio State that year, it was 2000, and Henson rolled right and threw the ball from like midfield to the back corner, to the other corner of the end zone to David Terrell for a touchdown. And I remember thinking to myself, like, this guy's going to be an unbelievable NFL quarterback when I watched that happen. And I think if Henson had come out that year, if Henson had decided to play football instead of playing baseball, and he'd gone back to Michigan in 01, I mean, as I remember, there was a chance he might have gone in front of David Carr as the first pick in the draft in 02. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's been a lot of rewriting of history when it comes to what that situation actually was.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. So I guess then let's because there's a couple ways I want to go with this interview. Let us start with the rookie quarterback and off of that story where obviously you got to time your departure from college just right to get to the right spot, and you got to make the right decisions, and teams have got to make the right draft choices. I always love visiting with you after a draft, a couple weeks after a draft, because now the chatter, people are a little bit more open about what was going on behind the scenes, and you wrote about it this week as well. The Atlanta choice, it's so fascinating. Yep. It's going to play out potentially for the next several years, it looks like. Who knows? Mm-hmm. We don't know. But why did the Falcons draft Michael Penix? How did this happen, Albert?
Yeah, I think to some degree it was maybe a little of an overcorrection of what's happened the last couple of years. And I mean, to be fair to Arthur Smith, who's now the Steelers offensive coordinator, things went haywire on them 2 years ago, and they were never able to fully put the toothpaste back in the tube. The plan had been to hang on to Matt Ryan for an extra year into the 21 season. Then, you know, they get involved in the Deshaun Watson pursuit. That puts things that kind of moves things sideways. So they wind up trading Matt Ryan. You know, in 21, they go forward with, you know, Marcus Mariota at quarterback. Sorry, I'm going to get my years mixed up now. 22. That was 22. They go forward with Mariota, and then last year with Ridder. And so, you know, really it's been kind of a difficult couple of years at the position. And, you know, ownership's obviously a part of that, you know. And so, you know, I do think, you know, like there was a mandate there for Terry Fontenot and for the new head coach, Raheem Morris, get the quarterback position right.
Which is why signing Cousins made complete and total sense, because it then frees you up to use the 8th overall pick to supplement the choice of Cousins. Like that's what it was. So I did not see this coming, and you know, and I still, and
neither did Kirk.
I'm still, and that's right, huh? It's true they didn't get to him until he was on the clock, correct?
Yeah, I mean, like, first of all, like their process, I do think. They went through a really full process in assessing Michael Penix and assessing the whole class. And, you know, I know that Raheem had gotten his coaches, some of whom had come with him from the Rams, to sit down and drill down on the quarterbacks early so they could do it ahead of free agency. So they could look at, you know, the rookies together, you know, with the potential free agents, Kirk Cousins being in that group. And, you know, like, I know they liked Michael Penix, you know, pretty early on, and they kept looking at it and drilling down on it and saying, okay, how do we, you know, get to a full assessment of it. That leads to, you know, seeing him throw at the combine, and he threw the ball really well at the combine, a lot better than he did at the Senior Bowl. And then, you know, getting on a plane and going across country from, from Atlanta to Seattle, and a huge group of them, I think 8 of them, got on Arthur Blank's jet and flew from Atlanta to Seattle to see Michael Penix throw. Penix threw great at that workout. You know, and then I think the discussion becomes, all right, like, if it comes down to it, are we actually comfortable taking him 8th overall? And, you know, I know a part of why they kept it quiet, and this part I understand, is that Terry Fontenot was in New Orleans in 2017 when Sean Payton was very high on Patrick Mahomes, and the Saints really felt like part of the reason they lost Mahomes was because word of their interest got out, and word of their interest getting out was confirmed to them, and in that Brett Veach, who, you know, was the Chiefs, I think, vice president of player personnel at the time, he's their general manager now, texted the Saints draft room after they traded up to get to 10 in front of the Saints, who were at 11, with two words: got him. You know, knowing, like, basically telling the Saints, like, hey, we knew you were onto this kid, and we just leapfrogged you to go and get him. And we all know what's happened with Mahomes. You get marked by your experience. And part of that was why Terry Fontenot made the decision to keep it quiet and just not say anything about his interest in Michael Penix to anybody, or even indicate that they would use the 8th overall pick or consider using the 8th overall pick on a quarterback. Now, the flip side of this, Rich, and I know I'm going on here, but the flip side of this is part of the reason Kirk Cousins left Minnesota was because they had been very honest and open with him about taking a quarterback in 2024, going back a year. When they were negotiating an extension in 2023, part of the issue for Kirk was they wouldn't guarantee anything past 2024. And they also said, you know, if the right quarterback comes along, you know, we can't rule out the idea that we would draft your replacement in the spring of 2024. Fast forward a year, and they're talking ahead of free agency this year. And, you know, the Vikings wouldn't guarantee all of 2025, and they wouldn't rule out the possibility that they'd take his replacement there. And so, you know, I think for Kirk in this situation, it was really looking at it and saying, I need to go to a place that's going to, you know, put it in writing, basically writing my contract in a way that's going to affirm to me that I'm going to be their quarterback for the next few years. So I'm not part of some sort of plan to offload me, you know, which is what he felt like Minnesota was going to be, you know. And so he gets the contract from Atlanta, but I don't know that he ever asked the question, are you going to take my replacement in the first round?
Well, why would he? And, you know, I mean,
yeah, so, I mean, you wouldn't think so.
So are you saying, just so I'm getting this right, you're saying Kirk Cousins left the team that has Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison on it with a head coach who is a former quarterback who is very quarterback friendly. And he's been with for a while. He left that team because that team was upfront with him about, we're going to choose your replacement in this draft, most likely, or we're not going to not do that. And he leaves for another team that gives him the contract he's looking for, but then goes ahead anyway and drafts his replacement without telling him until they're on the clock. And that team is doing so because they had such a tough time replacing Matt Ryan, and they got a veteran finally to replace Matt Ryan and chose a kid anyway because they want to make sure when they're post the guy who's the next Matt Ryan that they're not going through the experience they had between Matt Ryan and the next Matt Ryan. Is that – did I get all that right,
I think so, and that was why it took me so long because there's all, like, this so complicated.
Because it makes no sense, right? It just makes very little sense because the whole idea of, like, well, Cousins might – because you hear this spinning. You hear – and it may not be coming from Atlanta. You're hearing it from a lot of Falcons fans, or that you do hear it from members of the media who might be hearing it from the Falcons. I don't know. Well, that Cousins might not be ready yet. Then why sign him? Oh, well, we need to make sure that the next guy after Cousins is already here when we're drafting as high as we're drafting. But the guy that you're drafting is 24, and you may not find out that he's the guy for real until you finally do start him when he's close to 27. You know, it just doesn't.
If you want to take this to another level, Rich, right? Like, want to take this to another level? Think about this: that, like, it's viewed as one of the biggest advantages in all of sports, right? To have a top quarterback on a rookie contract. We saw what it did for Buffalo. We saw what it did for Kansas City. We saw what it did for Cincinnati. And you are basically negating the ability to do that now, because if he doesn't play until year three, well, then you got Kirk's contract this year, you got Kirk's contract next year, and then the year after that, you're still going to have, even if you cut him, like, the cap ramifications, you know, like, so that advantage that you would have having a quarterback on a rookie contract is basically canceled out by Kirk Cousins' contract. So by the time he becomes the starter, you're already, like, almost at the very end of that. So you better be sure that he's going to become the type of quarterback that's worth paying, because by the time he becomes the starter, you're going to be confronted with that decision.
No doubt. You know? And it's a decision that clearly the Bears just avoided having to do because Caleb Williams came along. Yep. And it's part of the conundrum. Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. So here's the question I have on this, and then we'll move on. The idea, though, that Penix is one of the most pro ready kids available in the draft this year. I mean, he's of the six that went in the first round, you'd put him in the top three that's most pro ready. You can rank it however you want with Williams and Daniels and him, however you want. I'm sure other people would have it on a board. So the idea, though, that he'd be there if Cousins isn't healthy. Is Cousins healthy? Is he ready to go week one? Is that the general
Cousins
sense?
I think Cousins will be healthy and ready to go week one. You know, the other element to this, too, that I think is interesting is I've heard people compare it to Green Bay, and I don't think it's like that.
No.
Because I think, like, Aaron Rodgers, like, put it this way, let's just, like, kind of sketch this out, right? So Jordan Love gets drafted in 2020. If Aaron Rodgers goes out and throws three picks in week three, people aren't yelling for Jordan Love to get on the field. You know what I mean? Like, because Aaron Rodgers has 15 years of equity in that place. So Aaron Rodgers doesn't need to worry about that. Right now, Kirk Cousins with the fan base doesn't have any equity. He's new. You know, he just got there. And so if he goes out and throws three interceptions in week three, what's the reaction going to be? It's totally different, right?
Yeah.
You don't have a sitting head coach. So that's another part of it. It's just, you know, it's just complicated in so many different ways. And, you know, the one thing that I keep coming back to with this And I look, if the Falcons think that Michael Penix is the next Matthew Stafford, and there are people in that organization, and remember, people in that organization worked with Matthew Stafford in Los Angeles. There are people who think as a passer, he's got that sort of ability, that sort of arm talent. But you know, so if he's Matthew Stafford, then you don't worry about the rest of it, right? If this leads to 2 years, 2 to 3 years of Kirk Cousins and then 10 of Michael Penix, well, then we're not worrying about that any of this anymore, right?
And that's the same comparison people are making to the Green Bay, but your
It'd be the same way we never talk about what the Bills gave up for Josh Allen or what the Chiefs gave up for Patrick Mahomes anymore. Correct. It was a lot. You know what I mean? We never talk about that anymore. We would 100% talk about it if those picks didn't work out. So that's the one thing that you have to look at. But yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing, like, Rich, is like these guys, like, he doesn't, like, Kirk doesn't have the equity in that organization and with that fan base yet, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's what makes it really difficult for him is, does this become a really awkward situation 2 or 3 weeks in? If, like, let's say that Kirk does play and Kirk is healthy, if it just takes a couple weeks to knock the rust off, does this get awkward? Or, to your point, if he were to have some sort of setback and Michael Penix plays his ass off the first month of the season, then what do you do? You know, I guess it's a good problem to have, but it's, I think, among the things that make this a really, really unique one when you come to, like, how quarterbacks are stacked and acquired.
Albert, we're up against it. Can I keep you through the break? Is that fine?
Yeah, sure.
You got it?
Yep, you got it.
Okay, you can ignore your children for that long? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay,
very good. It'd be a pleasure to hang out with you guys for a little longer.
I'm sorry, I should say your schedule's free. I shouldn't have put it that way. My bad.
Well, I'll be working on my tan later today, attaboy. So I got time for that.
Albert Breer, the George Hamilton of NFL Media, will rejoin us next when we take a break. This is The Rich Eisen Show. Let's talk Sleep Number, people, because quality sleep is so essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, and the same thing for your partner, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side, helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature, quiets your snores or your partner's? Sleep Number does that. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. 10 numbers apart, but it truly is the world of difference. The Sleep Number sleep that you get is unbelievable. You will love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now you could save 50%. That's 50%. On the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Let's talk Game Time. Boy, do we love using Game Time tickets at the Rich Eisen Show. And every single time I've been watching the basketball playoffs on TV, I've been wondering what it would be like to be at these games. And when you choose your tickets on Game Time, you can see the view from your seat, where the court is, where you are in relation to it. And then the all-in prices, that's my favorite feature. The all-in prices makes sure that you see the lowest price guarantee and also know exactly how much everything costs all in before you purchase. So all the guesswork is removed when you buy playoff tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use my code RICH for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Visit GameTime.co for restrictions. Again, create an account, redeem my code RICH for $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network.
He had to even things out after we did Michigan football memories off the top.
I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated, kind enough to stick around for another segment. I mentioned on Monday morning the Brady roast that I witnessed in person. Felt like a therapy session for the New England Patriots. Like, there's a bunch of stuff everybody got off their chest. There's always a germ of truth and a really well-crafted, well-told joke. And I heard a million of them that night. Albert, what did you think?
Yeah.
of that.
Do you think he admitted to Deflategate? Or
you know what? We talked about that as well. I always thought he did it. You know, to be honest with you, right. and I always thought he did it, and I always thought, like, what's the big deal? Like, I never ever thought that. But if you want to relitigate Deflategate or remember it, it was right before the Super Bowl. He was on the heels of Spygate when everybody thought that the Patriots had gotten away with something and the league abetted it by destroying all the tapes. And here was something again. And even though it kind of sent everybody crazy, news networks sent their network television sent their news divisions to grill Belichick, and the league handed it off to Ted Wells as an investigation to put it in a box before the Super Bowl week, so that wasn't going to be all over the Super Bowl week. And I always thought if Brady had done it, I thought he did it the entire time. Everybody seemed to forget the ball that was initially placed in for evidence was intercepted. You know, it's like, you know, it's just like, so it wasn't a perfect system. Who cares?
It was the same argument as Spygate, right? Like, which was, with Spygate, it was like, so we're supposed to believe that Bill, who has everything down to the detail, who knows who rushed for 432 yards in 1943 when half the NFL was over fighting the war, right? Like, knows all of that, but somehow missed what his camera people were doing, right? It was the same sort of argument. It's like all these quarterbacks are so anal about their footballs, right? About the balls and how they're conditioned and everything else. And yet the greatest quarterback of all time just had no idea. It didn't match up.
It didn't compute, but it didn't.
And I'm with you because I think the whole thing there was always, it's like, he may if this news had broken in March, he might have just admitted to it, but he couldn't at the time. And then things got so complicated.
Haywire.
That all of a sudden he became like a cornered animal. Well, what's a cornered animal do? Cornered animal fights, right?
Well, sure. So, especially if they're taking his cell phone, and suddenly now there's depositions being taken because you had to hand it off to an investigator to put it into a box so everybody could show up at the Super Bowl and say, can't talk about it. There's an investigation going on. And then the investigation took on its own life. But that, be that as it may, I was kind of referring to, you know, Brady and Belichick and Gronk and Edelman and all of that stuff. And then the Kraft moment of doing a shot with Belichick, which seemed even hashtag too soon there still, right? I mean,
it seems like Bill, I think Bill kind of conveyed two things. Number one, he did not like the Apple TV documentary. And number two, this is taking, like, his relationship with Kraft seems to have taken on a Jerry Jimmy dynamic, where sometimes they can be polite for the cameras, but there's still a lot of feelings there, you know? And honestly, like, that's why I think the documentary, and I, like, there were elements of it I liked, but like, that's why I thought the documentary was way too soon. I mean, it, like, Bledsoe, for example, right? Like, the reason Drew was so good on the documentary, and the reason, and one of the reasons I think Drew, I don't know, you were sitting there, like, was Drew like the best of the night? Like, he might have been, right?
Well, I mean, of the players, it was just great to see. First of all, he was the first, so he had that benefit. Yeah. And secondly, he had the largest axe to actually grind. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And for him to say what he said to Brady was fun and funny, and the way he did it was great. And, you know, obviously him talking about his 28th wedding anniversary and all of that stuff was kind of mind blowing at the time, because he was the first of one of his former teammates to go there. So sure, you know, he had.
But here's the key to that, though. The reason I brought him up, right, Rich? What else does he have? He has perspective. He's had over 20 years to, like, let this whole thing breathe. He's been able to compartmentalize it. You know what I mean? Like, with a lot of these things, the wounds are still fresh, you know, like in the documentary, like, the wounds are still fresh. Like, Bledsoe has had the benefit of having the time to let the whole thing breathe and to compartmentalize it and deal with it mentally. He had the same benefit, like, you know, talking for the doc and being up there on the stage on Sunday night. that the Bulls had, right? In talking and sitting down and talking for The Last Dance.
Yes.
Right. All these people have all this time to give it perspective, and they've probably been able to kind of put those things on the shelf in the proper place in their lives, and they're not still grappling with them.
So are you just to jump in here, are you going in this direction? This is interesting because we didn't talk about this, guys, the other day either, that the safe space of a roast allowed for more revealing comments to be said amongst each other than the Apple TV documentary, sitting down and having a director just ask a one-on-one question. Like, did we actually witness that? Is that what actually we're saying right now? I
mean, Bill was taking shots at Danny Amendola's production. I know it was a joke, but he was like, you know, he had 250 yards this year, 200 yards this year, or a Randy Moss calls a good first half.
You know, like, and what was it, you know, the success, who is it? You know, who had the best part in the success? Was it me? Was it you? Well, it was both of us because of me.
Right.
You know,
Amendola had the sharp, like, did Amendola have the sharpest knives in the dock, would you say?
Seemed like he was pretty pissed.
He was pissed. Like, he seemed pissed in the dock.
In the dock.
So, like, it.
Unbelievable.
It didn't seem so, like, so much of a coincidence that was a guy Bill kind of went after, was it? Or maybe it was. I don't know.
I
feel like he went after Danny pretty good.
In the same way that you're wondering, did Brady really, cop to Deflategate? Who knows what really was intended, but I'm just joking, or just, a good idea for a joke because everybody's been talking about this being a fault line in a relationship this entire time. I really was just loving that. I mean, that was totally an undercurrent part of this roast. And then, of course, there was just the brilliant comedy of Nikki Glaser and Tony Hinchcliffe.
She's great, too.
And Kevin Hart. You know, by the way, we had a great reveal yesterday. You can tell that when we spoke to Todd Bowles and I asked him if he saw the roast, he said he's a huge Nikki Glaser fan.
Yeah.
And then we put this out in a reel, and Nikki Glaser responded on our page with a mind blown emoji. Talk about how a roast can bring people together. I mean, it's kind of wild, but yeah, I honestly thought that, not to go too deep here, but I honestly felt like I was seeing a therapy session, a bunch of stuff getting off the chest. And you've been
there. Well, part of it is, like, again, like, I think a part of it is that the wounds are still open in some cases, you know, like, if you have the time to put everything in proper perspective, you're probably a little bit more like Drew was up there, where, you know, Drew's jokes, like, Drew seemed like good natured, you know, like on a night where everything might have had like this undercurrent of truth, you know, like, again, Drew had the chance to put everything in perspective. And I think he may be the one person who spoke who had the chance to do that. Whereas, like, for everybody else, like, it's not like they happened yet. These things happened yesterday, but they're still, like, close enough in your periphery where credit for everything is still being kind of divvied up and who is responsible for this and who is responsible for that. You know, a lot of times, like, if you don't have the benefit of time to sort all those things out, the wounds are still open. I think we saw those open wounds on Sunday night.
Before I let you go, Albert, what's the open question in the NFL months of May and June? Is it the Bengals who have asked for trade demands and seeing how that plays out? And nothing's happening with Ayuk, right? I mean, like, there's nothing going to happen now because
I think, I mean, just to address both Ayuk and Higgins, obviously, you know, I think there was some thought that they could be traded, and the Bengals and Niners have certainly gotten calls on those guys. I think one thing that changes the market a little bit is what's happening at the receiver position in general. And it's Amon-Ra St. Brown getting $28 million per, A.J. Brown then a couple of days later getting $32 million per. So now if you're another team, you're not just looking at giving up a premium draft pick, but also maybe paying the guy in the mid-30s. You know, if you're Ayuk or Higgins and you have that sort of leverage that a team's just traded for, you're probably going to ask for a lot. I mean, you know, God forbid what the Vikings must feel like right now.
Where's that bag, Albert? Where is that bag? Where's that bag? Where's the bag for him?
I mean, I would say he has made a lot of money just sitting on his hands and waiting, you know? And like, I mean, like, seriously, you look at where the market was a year ago and where this is going now, and all due respect to Amon-Ra St. Brown, but you know, if he's getting $28 million per, if you're Justin Jefferson, do you ask for 40?
Hell yeah.
Maybe, right?
Yeah, and see how it flies. I mean, obviously, I don't think that's going to, you know, happen, but yeah. That's why I'm wondering
that one's, I mean, those questions are big ones that need to be answered over the next, over the coming months. And there are a few of those coming down the pike. You know, Ja'Marr Chase is another one.
Yeah.
You know, the Bengals, do they pay Ja'Marr Chase now? If they do, how does that affect things with T. Higgins? You know, obviously the Bengals also are dealing with Joe Burrow coming off of the wrist injury. And that's something that I think we're all going to be closely monitoring. The crazy thing about Burrow is he still hasn't had a normal offseason as a pro. Because in 21, he was coming off of the ACL. In 22, he had the appendicitis. And last year, he had the calf thing. So he still hasn't had a normal offseason as a pro. So we'll all be monitoring Joe Burrow's wrist. And obviously, there's a lot going on there. The contract things, like you said, Jefferson, Chase, there are a few more that'll that I think we'll be looking at over the coming months. Trevor Lawrence is another one. And then I think, you know what, Rich? I still think your New York Jets are, like, fascinating. You know, they feel like they've got a really good team. And I know Joe Douglas, Robert Saleh like the fact that they're going into this thing with a little less attention on them. But if you look at that roster, man, I think getting Olufoshana was really smart in that it gives them, you know, a backstop at the tackle position. They address tackle aggressively. They really like Malachi Corley, who they got in the second round, who, you know, they believe can be a force as a run after the catch guy, is a perfect fit for Aaron Rodgers. And that defense brings a lot back, you know, like that defense, you know, was pretty good last year in a really adverse situation. So I think as we get closer to the season, you start looking at the Jets and it's like, okay, like if Aaron can be even 90% of what he was, that team should be the favorite in the AFC East. And maybe outside of Cincinnati could be the top contender to the Chiefs, who've won the conference the last 2 years, four out of the last five.
Man, that's saying a lot. I mean, there's a lot of ifs and buts right there. And then the last one for you, what about the Cowboys? I mean, we just referred to the wide receiver market exploding. Justin Jefferson is going to at some point sign. The you want to talk about making money just sitting on your hands. It's CeeDee Lamb. We all know that even if the Cowboys – are taking the approach of Jerry Jones's all-in approach for everybody. He wants to see more, what, leaves on the tree or whatever he wants to do before he pitches as a halfback, before he hits the out-of-bounds line, and whatever he's saying in terms of his analogies. We all know that when it comes down to it, CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons are going to be paid, have to be paid. There is no way they're going to let both of these guys go, either one of these guys go. Dak's a totally different story, to be honest with you, I think.
Right.
You know, quarterback, they could go back and get another quarterback somehow. I think Dak's definitely going to stay too, but that's the one that could be an open question. Well, we all know these guys have to be extended somehow, right? I mean, and it's
let me ask you this. Before we jump in on the extension, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Does it make sense to you that maybe the Cowboys are right now with Dak Prescott where the Rams were with Jared Goff in 2020?
Which is essentially
like,
what? Like
they're asking the bigger, are we ever going to get there with this guy question. And I'm not saying like that means offloading him, because the Rams obviously had a golden opportunity come in front of them to get Matthew Stafford, and Jared Goff's still a really good quarterback. We've seen that in Detroit.
Yes.
But can you see where Dallas might right now be with Dak Prescott where Rams were with Jared Goff?
Absolutely. And that's why I'm saying I can totally see a future for Dallas without Dak, certainly in the way that his contract is laid out right now. He has all the leverage.
Yep.
So he can figure out what he wants to do. And he's already even publicly saying, well, you know what? I want to be here. But, you know, if I'm somewhere else, that's, you know, he made it seem like he can handle that. We all know CeeDee Lamb's going nowhere. And we know Micah Parsons is going nowhere. So why not sign him now before the price for both goes through the roof? I don't get.
And that's the one thing that never makes sense to me. Like, I think the Eagles are always really smart with this. Like, if you look at the way the Eagles have attacked these situations over the last few years, you know, when they signed Jalen Hurts, it was at the beginning of the offseason before Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert and Lamar Jackson got their deals, right? And then you see this offseason, what they do? They signed Devontae Smith before, you know, like the receiver contracts came. And you just see it time and again. You know, the owner keeps the money in his pocket for an extra few months. And what do you know? You know, February and March turns into July and August. Now all of a sudden the price is through the roof, you know? And so we already have them working with Micah Parsons off of what Nick Bosa got last year. So that market already exploded and is up above $34 million per. And now you got CeeDee Lamb in a market that was at $25 million, could be at $35 or $40 by the time Justin Jefferson signs.
And you know you're going to keep him. I mean,
yeah. And it's not like Justin Jefferson is not going to get paid. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean,
like,
you have to beat the Vikings to that punch. Right. You must. I mean, you would think. But Jerry has said, like, he's on his own timetable, and bless him. I mean, who tells him how to do business? He's clearly insanely successful at business. I get it. But I just don't. Will this happen, so do you think before the season? Do you think it happens
I think they do happen before the season. Okay. But, again, the timing of it, like, whether that happens June 1st or August 15th, like, that could be a big difference, like, based on, you know, the contracts we get between now and then, you know. And I look, there are a couple of under the radar ones that I think could affect the market at different positions too, where, you know, like, could Matthew Stafford ask for, you know, more and more guarantees, you know, and with the Rams? Could Christian McCaffrey ask for more with the Niners? Like, I think the market's going to be affected over the next two, three months in a lot of different ways. And so, you know, I think whether you do these deals now or later, they're going to have to get done. And like we've just, like you're going to have, it's going to cost you money if you wait. I just think part of where they are, the psychology of where the Cowboys are right now, like, to me, is like, it's about, is this the group that we can win a championship with? And they've taken a bunch of cracks at it with this group. And now you've seen some of the guys that were part of that group, your Leighton Van Der Esch's, your Tyron Smith's, that are gone now. And Tony Pollard, Ezekiel Elliott, guys who've been offloaded over the last couple of years. And I do think a part of it is, okay, so what is our core going forward? And how do we want to build that core and reward that core and set ourselves up for the next 5 years? And, you know, I think Mike McCarthy is a part of that equation too. Like, there are assistant coaches there that are going into contract years, you know, like, so like, there's just like a lot of open questions about where they are in 2025 and beyond. And I think that that part of it is probably slowing the negotiations on some of these guys. And like you said, Rich, that's never a good tactic to wait.
I don't think
so. What I mean, it just isn't. I mean, again, like, people ooh and ah over the, like, a lot of the things the Eagles have done right there in the NFC East in their division. A lot of it's just common sense. You know, to me, like, signing Devontae Smith at the start of the offseason, like, you knew you wanted to keep him.
That's
it. Just pay him now, and then you won't be, you know, paying an extra $5 to $10 million in August for him.
I'm,
you know,
I'm with you.
Simple stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, like, I wish there was a better explanation for some of those things in Dallas. I'm just not sure that there is.
Albert, thanks for the immense time. 45 minutes. Yeah. Go out and get some sun. I think you got paler being inside for this long since the beginning of our conversation.
Well, I mean, I'm going to have a lot of time in California this summer too, by the looks of it. We got five teams.
Vegas, just, Vegas is coming out here. So your residency awaits, sir. Thank you for the time.
Absolutely.
You be well.
All right, thanks, Rich.
At Albert Breer. All right, one of my favorite baseball stories in a while before we beat it on down the line when we come back. Also, an update on the Tyson fight.
Oh.
Yes, that involves the Raiders.
Yeah. I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about
how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, Game Time Tickets is a place for you to get basketball tickets. We love basketball playoff tickets being on sale for you at Game Time. And the best part about the prices on Game Time app, they actually go down the closer it gets to the tip-off. Killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seats, lowest price guaranteed. Game Time takes the guesswork completely out of buying basketball playoff tickets. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use our code RICH. You get $20 off your first purchase. Restrictions apply. Visit GameTime.co for terms. Again, create an account and redeem our code RICH and you get $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Mike Tyson update. Mike Tyson update. Those are three words. Here's three other words. Mark Davis's help. What do I mean by that?
Yeah, what do you mean by
apparently
that?
Mark Davis is converted a warehouse, and it's Tyson's training spot in Vegas to get ready for this match against Jake Paul. He built him a scaled down version of the Mike Tyson Boxing Club that is located in Saudi Arabia. So Mark Davis is helping Mike Tyson get ready. And look at him. Maybe is that where he's running? Can't get enough of this running video. It's the noise. It's the noise. It's the noise. Three more words. They're your Mike Tyson update. Eating raw meat.
Whoa, what?
Whoa, what? Whoa. Say what?
Yes. Oh. He was on the Damon Elliott show. Okay. And apparently, I guess the host remarked that Mike looked 20 years younger. Here's the exchange.
You look like 20 years old. What the hell? What are you eating?
Raw meat.
Seriously, Mike. You're eating raw meat? Are you swallowing it? Or remember, you used to spit that stuff out?
I'm going to have to eat it now because my opponent's going to be raw meat.
That's right.
I mean, this is amazing. This is so good.
Okay. Now, I don't like telling other hosts what to do. The follow-up question is,
ears.
Do you have a nice Chianti along with a side of fava beans with that raw meat? What raw meat are you eating? I mean, my God. I think the last creature fed raw meat in Las Vegas, Nevada, were Siegfried and Roy's tigers. He had in his house.
Wow. He had a white tiger for a while.
He definitely did.
That's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
But that was, by the way, I'm referring to the actual
Hangover
meat.
Movie. Not the
food being fed. That's not what I was referring to.
I'm just saying.
Come on.
Which one got attacked? Was it Siegfried or Roy?
Dude, still too soon.
Sorry.
I think the time has passed.
Rest in peace. They're no longer with us.
Yeah.
Mike Tyson is eating raw meat and working out at a warehouse set up by Mark Davis. Jake Paul.
What are you doing? What
are you doing?
You know what?
He's just training low-key. That's the next big Netflix live event.
Oh, there's no odds. Odds are up now on this.
What do we got?
Since
what do we
it's
got?
An actual
got?
Real fight.
What do we got?
Mike Tyson, underdog.
Of course he is. Come on.
Yeah, Jake Paul minus 180.
This just in as well. You know how I opened the Brady roast?
I saw it.
Right. Do you know, I don't mind being the plan B for Jeff Ross. His plan A was to have Mike Tyson do it first. But somehow, someway, Mike was not available to do that. He wanted Tyson to open the Brady roast. Have no problem being the undercard for that.
That would have been something.
Can you imagine? Jeff Ross wanted Mike Tyson to do that first.
He stopped for raw meat and couldn't make it.
It would have been a different vibe. It would have been a different vibe. Just grabbing, chowing on the raw meat, spitting it out and saying, here's Kevin Hart.
I mean, chicken's got to be tough to eat.
Like, you can't eat raw chicken, you'll get sick.
Speaking of raw meat, Tom Brady's going to sit here for 2.5 hours and hear jokes about him and he wants to hear nothing about. Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Hart. All right. I want to thank Deshaun Foster and Albert Breer and Brian Anderson. We're back on tomorrow's program. The funny Thomas Lennon will be here in studio and more.
John brings his skewed sense of humor. Jeff brings tips to cut strokes off your next round. Together, it's those weekend golf guys.
They'll pay a lot of money to PXG and Titleist and Callaway and on and on and on. Right? How many yards do you think you're going to pick up with that extra driver? I think I can get an extra 5 to 10. What if I give you 15 to 20? Can you pay me more?
Jeff Smith teaches on the sliding scale.
Those Weekend Golf Guys, the podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.